This is Mythical.
Welcome to Ear Biscuits. I'm Rhett.
And I'm Link. This week at the round table of dim lighting, we tackle the question, what would you do if robots took your job? All of a sudden,
we have a whole
automation
season of television about
your
this,
career
Link.
Needs to change. Yeah, that's right.
This is the inciting event of Buddy System season 2. Not to promote that, but we could promote it. And what did you do when you lost your job to robots? Well, we can talk about that when we talk about it.
Yeah, because there's a lot of parallels between our Buddy System season 2 characters and the real us, even though it's us in a parallel universe. By the way, they're releasing Buddy System season 2.
I don't know if we're
in front of the paywall at some point. Be looking for that.
We'll make a big deal about it when it's all there.
Seasons 1 and 2, but if you're gonna only watch one, watch season 2.
That's confusing.
Unintentional plug. I guess you can watch season 1, but anyway. Yeah, there's some robot stuff happening there. And just let me say, this whole conversation, it spawned from a Reddit session.
You call them sessions?
Yeah, I have a Reddit session as I'm sleeping. My sleep.
I don't know how that works.
As I'm going to sleep in my bed, which that's another thing we may need to tackle, is if that's a good habit. But I went down this Reddit rabbit trail, which meanders through manufacturing processes, some eerie anecdotes, and lands smack dab on you.
Well, I'm featured in this Reddit thread? Directly?
Well, I don't wanna say too much, but I will say,
wow.
You know what? Yes. This Reddit thread that was featured on the homepage had nothing absolutely in the world to do with you, us, anything to do with us at all.
Hmm.
Somehow involved you.
Wow, I'm suddenly interested.
And that took, so it was a wild ride on Reddit, and I wanna take you back through it.
I'm planning
so
to participate in this discussion.
The robots are gonna take over at some point in our conversation.
Okay.
But we're gonna land on you inexplicably.
Great.
I'll explain it, but it's unexpected.
Okay. Before we get into that, I do want to tell you something that happened to me at a party. First of all, let me just say that—
You're a party animal.
Have been so occupied in the evenings. Tonight will mark the 6th straight night that I have had something that is like kind of like an involved—
An obligation.
Obligation.
An out of the home thing.
In this one tonight, my wife is actually gonna go with me, and we're going to— well, I'll just say we're going to the Mayans MC season 2 premiere.
That's right.
To support our friend Kurt Sutter. And this is the one that Jessie's going with me to. And this morning I was like, you ready for tonight? And she was like, what?
Again?
She was like, you're going somewhere again? I was like, you're going with me. And it didn't seem to make a difference.
Yeah, that's why Chrissy's not going. I am going. I'm going with you and Jessie. And I guess Stevie's my date.
Yeah.
Cause Christy, yeah, she's like, listen, this has been too much stuff happening. And I mean, if it wasn't for like a sense of, well, I wanna go for what it is, but I don't wanna go because it's just going somewhere else.
I understand that. I said, listen.
And I'm almost like, you're going, that's good enough as if both of us are going, that's enough support, but that's kinda lame, I'm not gonna do that.
I appreciate that.
I could change my mind. I could bail.
I wouldn't be surprised if you did, but I certainly hope you go. But it has been too much. And then I say, this is not typical. And she's like, you always say that. But it isn't. I don't do things 6 nights in a row.
That's not typical.
That's not the kind of life I have, man.
Right. By the way, I have something the next 2 nights too, so that's another factor.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I got like—
well, maybe you'll beat my streak.
Welcome back to school nights, 2 different schools.
In the end, you will probably tie me. I did something on Thursday and then on Saturday. You only did something on Friday. We went to the Casey Musgraves concert with our wives. That was
fabulous.
That was a great time.
Yeah, because
love that woman.
Because I went to the Rolling Stones concert the night before.
Oh, you did go to the Rolling Stones concert.
Yeah, man. I'm tempted to talk about that. First of all, I freaking love Kacey Musgraves. I mean, she's that album is amazing. She played most of it. It was wonderful. It's exactly what I love to listen to. But I gotta say, seeing the Rolling Stones, who I would not call myself a huge Stones fan, before going to see them, that was absolutely amazing. Everybody in the Rose Bowl was just in awe of the fact that these, like, how old did I say Mick was?
76, I believe.
76 years old, 4 months after having a heart valve replacement surgery. He's strutting around the stage for 2 hours, going an estimated 14 miles total.
So crazy. I don't know, it's just.
And they sounded good.
It's because the devil's in him. That's how he's able to do it.
He had sympathy for the devil. Man, me and Britton had a great time. It was his treat. It was a long time coming because of the heart valve replacement, but man, I get it. I get the Stones now. I feel like I'm an insider. I got the lips and the tongue on my shirt.
Oh gosh.
Yeah. Best band logo maybe of all time.
It is, I mean, I kind of feel like going to the Rolling Stones and then to Kacey Musgraves, like that.
Back to
this
back,
is not
baby.
It's not the ideal, because you're gonna judge Kacey Musgraves' show womanship versus the Rolling Stones, which is just she's doing a different thing.
Oh, absolutely. But anyway, you went to a party.
I went to the one thing that you didn't go to, and let's call it a fundraiser. It was a fundraiser for a charity that we're involved with, and there was a guy there who I've met a couple of times. He's an older guy. I mean, he's older than me. And super nice guy. And we were having a bunch of interesting conversations about some stuff that he was involved with. But one of the things that he needed to show me, we got into a conversation about jackfruit.
Jackfruit.
Yeah. And I recently had seen how big a jackfruit could be. Have you seen how big a jackfruit could be?
I can't even say I know what a jackfruit actually
is. Okay, so you know
when- Like a grapefruit?
No, not like a grapefruit, no. So you know when you go to like a vegan restaurant and they've got like barbecue, but it's not barbecue, it's something else?
Oh yeah.
Often it's this jackfruit thing.
Kind of stringy.
Yes, it's got an interesting texture to it. That's jackfruit. And so yeah, looks like that. And it's kind of spiky on the outside.
It's green, the color of an avocado. It's shaped like, how big is it?
Okay, well, how big would you think that was, just looking at it?
It looked about as big as an avocado or an apple.
It's this big.
What?
They can be 70, like seven. Like this guy was said,
twice the size of an average watermelon?
Yeah, so.
What?
Yeah, so when I went to.
Good gracious. That fruit is jacked.
This guy's actually helping to import some jackfruit into California, and jackfruit is like exploding in popularity, right? So, and I had just, with Locke at the grocery store a week ago, had seen a jackfruit. And I was like, how in the, that's a jackfruit? It's that big? And we almost got it as like a gag gift for Jesse. Like, let's bring home this jackfruit and see what she does with it. You know what I'm saying? Because it was just so big. Well, anyway, we start talking about the business that he's involved in, getting jackfruits in. And he's like, oh, I gotta show you this one I found. So he takes out his phone and he begins scrolling through his photos. And he's like, okay, hold on. No, I'm getting close. Okay, all right. And just moving his thumb like this and just rifling through hundreds, thousands of photos.
Okay.
2.5 minutes into the scrolling, and the saying, oh, no, I'm almost there. Give me a second. I begin to think that I am the victim of a YouTube prank video.
you started looking around for cameras?
I begin to think that I might be on What Would You Do with John Quiones, which incidentally, I think is a YouTube channel now.
What would you do if somebody scrolled forever? Like, how long would it take in their scrolling for you to just jump in and stop it? Did you think about that? Hey man, you know what? Just email it to me.
Well, at one point I was like, yeah, I know they're big, man. I was like, yeah, I saw one at the grocery store. He's like, no, you gotta see this one.
2.5 minutes is a long time to watch somebody scroll.
Well,
are you looking over his shoulder on his phone, and is he scrolling through nothing but photos of jackfruit?
Lots of photos of fruits and things that he imports.
And he's like, "Hey, this is my girlfriend, and this is when we went to the beach, and you know, this is my dog."
He is rifling through a grid of photos.
It was like a wound on my dog. I had to send this picture to the vet.
He's not giving any commentary on the stuff that he's scrolling through. He's just saying, "Hold on, up there," and you keep thinking, "Okay, here," and then it's not there, and then he keeps going. Now you know me. I'm a nice man,
You're nicer to strangers.
I have a high tolerance for this kind of behavior. I don't know if it's average tolerance, or it's either average or higher tolerance.
Well, you have a higher tolerance than I do.
Oh, hell
yeah. Let's at least say that.
And so I was like, what am I gonna do? Like, I had time to start having like an existential crisis. Like, because every time I look back, he was just saying, hold on, give me a second. Here it comes. No, hold on, let me see. And so I was just like, I guess I'm just gonna stay here in the moment. I'm gonna let this guy find his big ass jackfruit. And then when I see it, I'm gonna be really impressed. So I did that.
Well, it's kind of a lot of build up. So
it's pretty
big. So he did find it.
It was really big.
He found it?
Yeah, it was very large.
Yeah, you're not even telling that part of the story. You're like, oh yeah, he did find it. It was the story's over?
It was 70.
Tell me about the freaking jackfruit.
It was 70 pounds. The jackfruit was 70 pounds.
70 pounds?
Was that tall? Three feet tall? I don't know.
Good gosh. What gave you a sense of scale? Was he holding a penny next to it?
Him holding it.
Good gosh, jackfruits can get big.
Wow, I bet
they don't taste as good. Of course,
it's like a big catfish. You don't want a real big catfish.
Pork. You could put feet on that in the snout and it would be like a vegan pig. Yeah. It's literally as big as a pig.
Jackfruit takes on the flavors of whatever. It's a lot like tofu, takes on the flavors.
But let's get back to the scrolling. Because I do want to talk about that.
Well, you know what? He got back to the scrolling.
Again?
After he found the jackfruit.
He's a scroller.
I lost count. 3 to 4 times, he had something in his mind that he wanted to show me, and he would go back to the photos. And then, I don't think it was ever as long as that first time, but I was like, this is like a Seinfeld episode. If Seinfeld was made in 2019, he's the scroller.
Now, you know what? Somebody needs to talk to him because he's too dependent on photos.
He needs to just do hand gestures.
You know, like,
he's this big. Or pick up a small child and be like, it was this big.
Or make it his wallpaper. If the anecdote comes up that often, you need to have it printed on a business card.
I think this is a perfect example of why you need favorites. You need to take advantage of your favorites feature on your photo collection.
Yeah, you're talking about making an album.
If you need like, oh, here's the photo of me with my kids. Here's the photo of the big ass jackfruit that I love to talk about.
The stories I always tell, but then spend way too much time scrolling for the payoff photo album. That's what you call it. I've actually thought a lot about this, like,
okay, good.
Pausing a story to scroll, because actually, on the way to the Rolling Stones concert, we were in an Uber. Britt and I were both in the back seat, and this guy was coming on strong. Like, he wanted to know everything about us, and like,
really? He's an inquisitive Uber driver? Those are the worst.
He had something hanging from his mirror that said Fish, the band.
Uh-oh.
So then Britt starts talking about Fish. So then, like, literally for 20 minutes, the two of them are just talking about Fish. And I'm like, this is great. I don't want to be a part of this.
Yeah, I'm just
over here looking out the window, looking at my phone. But the guy, like, he made such a connection with Britt. He was like, oh, he's an artist. He was like, I used to be a producer, but I only charged $15 an hour. And
he had this
hard luck story. Yeah. And then he's like, give me your information to put in my phone. Let me give you my information to put in your phone. So he like made Britton like put his name and number in his phone, and then he's like, and then he pulls up a notepad and he's like writing down Britton's information. I'm like, he's not coming for me. He's like, what about you? What's your name? You know, it's like 30 minutes in the conversation.
Charles. That's when you say Charles.
I think I said Link, because maybe I was thinking about that.
Yeah. You have the best excuse in the world. I say James quite a bit. At Starbucks, my freaking name is James.
He was like, and what do you do for a living? And I was like, I froze. And then I was like, I'm a video producer. I did not, this is the last guy on earth I wanted to get.
He was video like, producer.
He was like, what kind of videos? I was like.
Digital.
I was like corporate videos.
No, what, you lied, man.
I said I make corporate, well, you
I
know
mean,
what?
We are
I make
a corporation.
Videos on a corporate platform. Google is a corporation.
We're a corporation, yeah.
And we're a corporation.
Yeah, so you didn't lie, you told the
truth. On a couple of levels, I make corporate videos, and I said, I like to think that if people don't watch my videos, they would die.
What was Britain doing when you said
corporate videos?
Corporate
videos are typically like safety videos. I never made eye contact with Britain. I was pretty ashamed of what I was doing.
I'm a video producer of corporate videos. My name is Charles, please stop talking.
What was my point? Oh yeah, and then he goes back to talking about the fish concert. Yeah.
Hey, mission accomplished, man.
Mission accomplished. And he's like, man, I was on the front row of this show, and like, he starts scrolling through his. He's scrolling and driving. Well, we're in bumper to bumper traffic in the Rose Bowl.
Got it. All right.
We're trapped with this guy. It could be an hour.
Oh, trapped with a scroller.
And now he's scrolling. Mm. And his phone's up there mounted. And so, I'm like, should I look away? Should I look at his photos? He's not scrolling that quickly. And he's saying things. Like I said, he was like, oh, this is me and my girl at the beach. And this is like a screenshot I took or something. And it's like,
oh, he's a commentary laden scroller, which is better than a non-commentary.
But I feel like you should look away. It's kind of like when somebody's entering their password, like if you want to help somebody with their laptop, like an in-law or something, like you want to avert your eyes when they put their password in. You know what I'm saying?
I do. I don't see how it's relevant, but I appreciate.
Well, when somebody's scrolling through their entire photo life,
you're seeing
just to
into
get
their
to
life.
A jackfruit, you never know what you might see. And I don't, there's lots of things I don't want to see an Uber driver do. You know what I'm saying?
Okay, got it, yeah.
You know?
That's a different album.
I'd like to see him just drive and be quiet. He actually talked about, he made a comment about, man, I really enjoyed talking to you. And this is in the middle of the conversation, not the end. Talking to Britton, he's like, because a lot of people do get in the car and they're like, you know, they're like dipshits. They'll just like be quiet. I'm like, I'm a human, you're a human. And I'm thinking, that's me, man.
I don't really think you can call that a dipshit.
I know, he's kind of harsh.
I mean, some people just don't want to have a conversation.
And then he's like, I'm coming to this show later. And then he's like, I'm gonna pull you guys right up here. And he's like, he goes through the parking and they're like charging like $20 for parking. He's like, I'm just dropping these guys off. So they let him go through. And then he's like, I'm not leaving. And then it dawns on me as he's pulling into a parking space, this guy is gonna be with us all night. And then he's like, he's parking the car, he's like, I'm gonna give you 5 stars and I'm coming to the show. It's like, do you guys have an extra ticket? And I was like, no, thank goodness we don't have an extra ticket.
I'm coming to the show, do you have an extra? And you're not coming to the show unless you can get a ticket.
Right, so then we split up, but for a second I thought he was gonna be with us all night because he already had a ticket.
I think you would have shut that down.
I would have,
I think you
absolutely.
Would have. I think even I would have shut that down.
But I wouldn't have stared at his scrolling. See, I'm still human.
And I think people who have a low capacity or high capacity for tolerating scrolling have a low capacity for exposing people to scrolling. Like I've got like I'll scroll for 12 seconds and then I feel like I'm inconveniencing somebody and I'm like, you know what, don't worry about it.
I think on Google Photos, you could type in jackfruit and it would literally pull up.
You can do that on the iPhone as well. And I almost told him that, but I just didn't.
Of course, it will pull up 3,000 images for him.
Right.
So.
All right, so we could talk about that forever, but we're gonna talk about
Let's go down another
robots.
Wild rabbit trail. Earbiscus is supported by Superfeet.
Did you know that more than 75% of Americans will experience foot pain in their lifetime, but only 10% will seek out a solution for that pain? Well, guess what? Your feet don't have to hurt.
When you add the signature orthotic shape of Superfeet insoles to your shoes, you give your feet comfort and support where they need it most, helping redistribute forces to reduce stress and strain on your entire body, not just your feet.
Superfeet insoles are clinically proven to decrease fatigue, reduce injury, and improve comfort. Since 1977, Superfeet has helped millions of people worldwide experience the life-changing magic of comfy, pain-free feet.
Superfeet insoles upgrade the fit, feel, and function of your footwear to help you feel your best. The signature orthotic shape of Superfeet gives your feet the right type of support where you need it most.
Physicians not only recommend Superfeet to their patients, they wear Superfeet insoles in their own shoes. Superfeet is the number one doctor-worn and recommended insole.
Superfeet has thousands of five-star reviews and is the insole of choice for top athletes on the field, on the ice, and on the slopes, and everywhere in between.
Superfeet has a wide range of insoles for every activity, every shoe, and every foot. From cushioned and flexible to firm and supportive, you can dial in your fit by taking their quick online quiz. We took the quiz. We've got our insoles coming. They're on their way. You just answer a few short questions, and Superfeet will recommend the best insole choice for you.
Visit superfeet.com and enter the promo code EAR at checkout for 15% off your first order, plus free shipping.
Apartments.com has more rental listings than anywhere else. So finding the perfect place is easier than ever, and so is finally moving in together, just the two of you.
It's a big step. Lots of new responsibilities, lots of adjustments. Most likely, they'll wake you up at odd hours to go to the bathroom.
And you'll most definitely find yourself in trouble coming home late for dinner. They may even unroll all your toilet paper next time. It's just what happens when you two find a new place together.
But you're not doing it because you feel like it. No, you're doing it because you love them, because they're family. And that's why Apartments.com has more pet-friendly rental listings on the internet. Did you know that's what we were talking about?
Yes.
Pets. So that you and your furry family can find the perfect new place together.
Apartments.com, the place to find a pet-friendly place.
Okay, let's get into this. You know, I have this habit of laying in bed and I just pull up the Reddit thread because it just sends me into a world that's not my own. There's many threads that I follow that are relaxing, educational, entertaining, mesmerizing, but in no way related to my work. Whereas if I pull up Twitter, then that's a problem because I feel like even if I just look at tweets of comedians, I start to get anxiety.
Interesting.
Anxiety with a G. Because I just feel like it's the social media trap of comparison. I think I do it on that level, on like some sort of professional level. Like, I don't tweet and I'm not funny. And then you, even on Instagram, I know we did a whole episode about it, but that's starting to creep in. So like a little bit of that. But it's mostly just like exotic locations that I look at on Instagram, and that's not deep enough. I need something deeper, and Reddit gives me my fix. So let me take you on a journey. This wasn't the popular page. It was posted in a couple of different threads, but the one that I follow is Educational GIFs, or GIFs, if you will, and the title of the post is, "This is how canning process is done!" Exclamation point. And then it's a repost or an embed post from the Reddit thread manufacturing porn called Kodai canning process! Exclamation point. You know, when you hear canning process, it might sound boring, but if you add an exclamation point at the end, I'm listening.
This is like how it's made.
It's a video of a can of what is beer. I couldn't tell what it was because it's like it's not a can that I would recognize. Maybe Kodai is a name brand? I actually don't know. So this video is cool because of course it loops, but it shows three different steps in the manufacturing process before it loops. So it starts and you see them spinning on the lid of a can. And I had never really understood, I was really drawn in. I never really understood that the top of a can, like where you pop it open, like that's sealed on. I never thought about it.
Right.
And then the camera moves, after it shows you a number of these lids being slapped on the cans, then it moves earlier in the process and shows you right before that's later in the process. It twists the can lid and spins off all the beer foam. And then it goes earlier in the process and shows you all this foamy beer coming out before the lid is slapped on.
Yeah, I think this GIF is just looping in the wrong place, or maybe, because this is the beginning. Coming in with the beer.
See the
on
beer
top.
Coming in with all the foam, then they scrape the foam off, and then they throw a lid on, and the way that the lid slides on is just
I never thought about nice. The fact that, you know, because it's contents under pressure. Does that mean that the there's it's extra carbonated when it goes in? Is that why, like, I would think with that much foam at the top, there would be more foam underneath the surface. And so when you ended yeah. up getting a can of beer, it would have like an inch missing of beer because the foam would have just turned into liquid. But it's completely full. I just don't understand how this process leads to that. Because it's like overflowing right there.
Yeah, they fill it up to where the foam is all the way at the top, and then they smash the lid down so there is some pressure, and there's probably from the carbonation of the beer, whatever you would call it. See, this is where you're going, and if you were a commenter, this is what you might comment. And if you knew that, so you might ask that question, someone would come in and answer the question, and then the rest of us would learn that. So whenever I watch a video like this, first of all, I'm mesmerized by it, and then I'm like, there's 343 comments under this video. Mm-hmm. I wonder where it goes, and I wonder what most people have engaged in, which will rise to the top if you don't use Reddit. I'm just giving you a little background. So it could be anything. They could be talking about anything. And the first comment, the beginning of my journey, says F word. I'm not gonna say it. It's just not. Those machines must suck to maintain. So we got a Debbie Downer right at the top of this thread. People talking about how unclean it is because basically there's beer foam going all over the can, and then in the next step they spin the can at a rapid, aggressive speed, and then this beer foam goes everywhere. So this is what someone commented, and then everybody seemed to engage under this one comment. So the person says, those machines must suck to maintain. Of course, I'm like, yeah, I was kind of thinking that myself now that you mention it. And then the person says, someone else responds, sticky, smelly mess. I don't forget that.
But clearly, that is not really the case.
And then Funky Credo comes in there and says, beer is a perishable product. Those machines are cleaned religiously because otherwise beer won't have a long shelf life due to contamination. It can be sticky during the shift, but overall, it's kept clean. I worked for a hot dog manufacturer, and every single machine was deconstructed, soaped up, scrubbed, and rinsed, then reassembled at the end of every shift. And at this point, I'm like, dang, I'm taking a journey to the end of a hot dog shift. And they're freaking disassembling the entire machinery, washing like, it all down.
I know you're going other places, but I just, like, I have to say that why can't they just like steam the whole thing? You know, like why can't there just be like a steam component that comes in and just blasts it with steam and soap and stuff? Why can't it be self-cleaning? I don't understand why you can't, why you gotta take it apart? Surely this isn't
crevices.
How, this isn't how everything is done.
Crevices, man. Hot dog and beer gets in crevices.
Hot dog probably gets into more crevices than beer.
And you can't get it out. So now I'm on this cleaning manufacturing lines thread, and I'm all in. Like, I was actually surprised at myself at this point that like, I was so interested in this, and I will keep reading.
Okay.
I have an industrial engineering degree. You know, right. It's basically a degree that teaches you not how to make things, not to design things, but design how the things are made. Mm-hmm. So it's the designing a manufacturing process.
Right.
Once the thing that you know you want to create has already been designed. Well, what's the most efficient or clean or safe or all of the above way to actually get that thing made, get that beer canned? One of my favorite classes was, there was a manufacturing processes class, and we would just go and take tours of factories.
Well, yeah, tours. I mean, it's a field trip class.
Yeah, field trip class.
Yeah.
So you got the hot dog manufacturer talking about deconstructing, soaping up, scrubbing, rinsing, reassembling the machines at the end of every shift. And then someone commented, and people say automation will take jobs away. And then Funky Credo comes in and says, it already did.
Oh, yeah.
The company I work for was in Ukraine. Due to cheap labor costs, the level of automation is low since it's not cost effective. Our facility made 4 tons an hour of hot dogs using multiple manufacturing lines and close to 100 people per shift directly on those lines. I toured a number of facilities in the US. Most are so automated that a single line makes 8 tons an hour, which is twice as much, with only 8 people directly involved,
yeah,
as opposed to 100. And then someone commented, I bet those 8 people got a ton of shit to clean and it probably doesn't all get done.
No.
And then Movie Man 56 comes in. I used to work in a pastry facility doing sanitation. Yes, now we're going from beer to hot dog to pastry. People working in factories coming out of the woodwork and I am here for it.
I noticed that.
Pretty much everything can be power washed in most facilities, making it incredibly easy to clean. See, this is the question you had. Why do they have to take stuff apart? Really, do you really need to do that? Plus, we had to pass cleanliness inspections every morning, which involved multiple cotton swab tests on every machine for food bacteria. We cleaned the entire facility.
An industrial engineer here.
We cleaned the entire facility with like 3 people versus the 15 that worked the line. Needless to say, I'd far trust US cleaning since it is typically all designed to be cleaned and multiple tests are run before the facility can even open.
Because the moment that you get bacteria on the equipment and it's transferred to the food, you basically are completely shut down. Your livelihood is gone. So
right,
all the incentives are to maintain very high standards.
And another commenter comes in and talks about how in other facilities that the machines do start to clean themselves, but there's still like rigorous swabbing that's happening.
Right.
You know, I think I would do good in a place that involved rigorous swabbing, but I would still be very anxious. Like you'd probably never find anything on your swab.
But even the rigorous swabbing can easily be, well not easily, will eventually be automated. I mean, all right, steps can be automated. The rigorous swabbing, rigorous swabbing will be automated, right? It could be automated.
Right.
A robot's probably gonna be better at, you know, evaluating the swab than just some dude named Bill.
And then Trepanation by 45 swoops in and expands the convo.
Uh-oh.
There's an interesting, albeit slightly esoteric, argument for automation that suggests that once we as a species get through the initial bumps of steadily implementing it more and more, that humans will thus be able to concentrate their lives more on their truly passionate pursuits due to the vast elimination of boring, tedious tasks. That once we're free of manually having to, quote, waste our lives performing the various tasks out of necessity, we'd have the opportunity to become more in touch with our humanity and spend our time pursuing the things that we truly love, and that a majority of previous jobs that related to performing such boring work would translate towards less intensive automation supervision or orchestration, etc. Obviously, there's much, much more nuance to that sort of cultural development, but it does strike me as an interesting and somewhat counterintuitive notion, don't you think?
I think there's a lot of assumptions about human behavior built into that.
Yeah, yeah.
You seen WALL-E?
There is an assumption that once we're freed up, we'll be able to, people will instinctively concentrate their lives more on their truly passionate pursuits.
Some people will.
Yeah, in WALL-E, as I call it. If memory serves me, I don't remember much of the plot.
Well, if memory serves you correct.
Or much of the dialogue.
It could serve you incorrect.
It could disserve me.
Yeah.
There's a bunch of unhealthy people just slobbing around in hover recliners watching screens.
Right.
Yeah. Robots doing everything.
I mean,
spaceships. We have leaving the planet because it has been destroyed.
We do have some data on this, right? I mean, there are people who don't work for whatever reason. I'm not talking about people who want to work and can't, but people who are choosing not to work. They might be retired. I guess the retired community is an example. So you've got people who are inactive and watch television, eat and watch television and become the types of people that were featured in WALL-E. And then you have another set of the population that chooses to do activities, what might be referred to as active leisure.
Mm-hmm.
Some things are more active than others.
So you're using the retirement thing as an analogous to, well, if your job was taken away and then you had to find a new job, you would have the opportunity to find one that you were more engaged in.
Well,
than something that was more monotonous that a robot could do.
Well, and I like to, I mean, I like to extrapolate things out to just the logical conclusion, right? I mean, a lot of people make all kinds of arguments about how automation is actually not going to lead to unemployment. And I don't really want to get into it. That's kind of a boring, that's not, I don't want to get into that boring conversation. I think that—
We could just talk about cleaning manufacturing equipment the whole time if you don't want to, if well, you want to make sure we're not boring.
Well, what I'm saying is I don't want to debate whether or not automation is going to really be a problem for people's jobs. But I think that it's kind of unavoidable if we don't, which I actually think that the chances that we just exterminate ourselves because we don't, we're not dealing with global crises in the way that we should. We're dividing as opposed to being unified and coming together and solving problems. I think we'll probably, I think we will exterminate ourselves before we actually get to this point. But let's just say people wake up and realize that the world is falling apart and dying and we actually need to do something about it. Let's assume that humans—
Well,
do,
by the way,
that,
that is WALL-E. They left Earth.
Right.
They had to abandon it.
Yeah, well, let's just assume that we wake up and figure it out. Then it is inevitable that technology will progress to a place where we have the option to get the robots to do all the stuff that we don't want to do. Then let's ignore like robots' rights issues and whether or not they have personhood. That'll become a debate. It already is. Whatever. Okay.
We'll let them worry about that.
Yeah. But it is inevitable that we'll get to a point where you don't have to be the person to clean the beer machines or the hot dog machines. Like you could if you want to, maybe, but you actually, you probably won't even be allowed to because you'll be way worse at it. And so, and even the jobs that we have, like, okay, it isn't that far off that, I mean, first of all, there's already AI that's making YouTube videos and they'll be the first completely AI generated movie in however many years and people will go, eventually the stuff created by the robots, and this may take several generations, many generations, but eventually the robots will be able to create better than us. And you will enjoy a movie created by robots from top to bottom more than the one made by humans, right? Everything will be eventually replaced. The robots will be able to do it better eventually.
I just have
then a, what are we gonna
do? I can't believe that a purely creative endeavor would subject to so much sensibility.
No, I'm saying
can ever be.
This is way far into the future because replicating the human mind and human intuition. I mean, did you see the thing where this could be? I don't know if this is just one of those internet things that's not true, but you know the picture of the chihuahuas and the blueberry muffins in the grid?
Oh yeah.
And somebody sent that to, I think a text thread that we're on, and they were like,
I think Jesse sent it.
AI is not able to tell the difference between the blueberry muffins and the chihuahuas.
Now if I squinted, I couldn't either.
Right, but you, as a human, you can look at it and within about half a second, you can determine which one's a chihuahua and which one's a blueberry muffin. Apparently AI still can't do that, right? But they will be able to do that if they can already, if that's just a meme that isn't true.
What I don't understand is why robots can't push the button that says, I am not a robot on websites. Like, now that seems pretty simple.
Yep.
You should be there, robot.
Really good point.
I mean, that's it literally says, I am not a robot, and then there's one button to just check. It's like a checkbox. So I'm pretty much I'm eroding your entire argument with that. They can't check the box, man.
But they will. I'm just saying that there's gonna be all kinds of ups and downs, all kinds of arguments, ethical conundrums leading to a place, but eventually, technology inevitably, if you don't exterminate yourself, it progresses to a place where something you create surpasses anything that you are. I just think that that's inevitable. So there will be—
And cool.
There will be a point in which you're like, I don't have to contribute essentially to society.
I mean, the thread goes on to universal basic income, which I don't really have the appetite to go there, except to say that, well, some people will say, well, if that exists, then I actually don't know, but I presume that there's then an argument on one side that's like, well, you know, then it gives people a padding that then they're not gonna do anything. You've got the low level, you've got the base level income that you need to thrive. So it really comes back to, and we can make this about us, but what do you do if you have free time? I mean, if you have to find a job and there's no like, there's no financial cushion there, then hopefully we're creating enough jobs where everybody can get one. It just doesn't make sense to me that everybody will automatically be able to then move to what they're most passionate about. But I also don't know that most people, if they are financially secure enough, I think there's some people who then like go wild with their passions and there's some people who just go lazy.
Yeah, it's very personality dependent.
Yeah, and I actually feel, I feel like my natural instinct is toward the entropy of just laziness, just falling apart.
I don't think so. I think you'd get very frustrated with yourself if you actually did that with your leisure time. But I'm reading a book right now.
I would become depressed.
Yeah.
But I think I would have to push through that. I think I'd have to go through.
I think you would.
I think I would have to go through that valley.
I'm reading a book right now that I'm not gonna say what it is because it might be a wreck once I get through and decide that it's a wreck. And it, by wreck, you know, a wreck in effect at the end of the show.
Just say it again.
No, but no.
I don't know if it's good?
Because I feel like it might be a strong recommendation, but I'm only like a third through it. But one of the principles that is being discussed in the book is essentially where people, you have this idea that, okay, well, what I'm going to do when I get old and I've done my work and it's time to retire is I'm going to be, as my Instagram, shout out to RedMC on Instagram, as my Instagram bio says, future international man of leisure, right? And it's a joke that I just came up with, you know, it's kind of a non-joke. It's a playful description. And
yeah, I think it will turn some people against you.
Yeah, and as a result of this conversation and as a result of this book I'm reading, I actually think I'm going to change that.
Yeah, I definitely hate you because of it.
Now, but so the implication is that, okay, when I have free time, I'm going to be a man of, and I would say active leisure, you know, travel, experiencing things or whatever.
Kite surfer?
I don't think I'm gonna go there.
I'm
now,
on the shoulders.
The argument that this guy makes in the book is that people who live lives of purpose and have true joy are those who, as they get older, they actually increase their commitments to other people. It might be a commitment to a cause or a commitment to a community or an organization or an individual, but essentially that people who are the most satisfied and the most purpose-oriented are the people who have commitments. I gotta be there for something for somebody.
Six nights in a row.
And that's not what my six nights in a row have been about, but you know what I'm saying. And,
yeah.
And that kind of struck me. I was like, first of all, this isn't fundamentally against, goes against anything that I already believe or think or want for my life, but it made me think differently about that little quip in my Instagram bio because I do like to think about, hey, we're gonna travel and we're gonna do this. And he's like, everyone thinks that that's what they want to do, but that life gets pretty empty pretty quickly. And so I think that the real question, the ethical question, when people have this free time, because we're assuming that people are gonna have the option to be like, okay, I get my universal basic income and now I can play video games, I can get lost in VR, that's gonna be a huge cultural problem, is people getting just basically living their lives online.
And then other people will just binge watch them VRing their lives.
Right, I think the people who are gonna be truly happy, like you're talking about fighting through this depression, right? Mm-hmm. Like, okay, if you commit yourself to just personal pursuits, I'm gonna go do what I want to do, whether that's watch TV or go kite surfing, it could be active. I do think that eventually you're gonna be like, there's not a lot here. This isn't what—
Why am I here?
Humans are
Why
not—
Why am I even still here?
Yeah, and so the principle in this book is that we think we're all about independence, but really we're built for interdependence. And so I think that there's this idea that, like, listen, we evolved in community, and like you go back just a very, very short period of time to where we were living in these like communities of like 100 to 150 individuals that all had a role, and you were contributing to each other's lives, you were involved in each other's lives emotionally, physically, and you were helping raise children and
that
kind of thing.
And when you got old, you were valued for your perspective.
Yeah.
Your wisdom.
And so I think that, again, if we don't exterminate ourselves, we get to this point where all the robots are doing all the work. The only way we will survive as a species is if we somehow replicate this community that exists for our own health. So you know what I'm saying? Like, we will come up with roles.
Absolutely.
And interactions and relationships for our own personal well-being that may not even be, they're not contributing to like the GDP because the robots are doing all that. This just becomes about just well-being amongst people. First of all, shit ton of people.
That's something to pay for.
Billions of people.
You can make a living doing that.
More people than the world can probably support. But
it doesn't have to be charity. I mean, there's occupations associated with this, and more can be invented. This is exactly what I was getting at when I was like, aspirationally, I want to be the type of person that takes life by the horns. You know, it's like, we don't, my nanny, Lucille, my mom's mom, she worked her entire life in a shirt factory.
Right.
You know, and my Aunt Vicky, right beside her, Aunt Vicky was a folder, I believe, and Nanny was an inspector. You know, the little sticker you get with a number.
With the name on it.
Well, the number was-
Inspected by Lucille.
Lucille was number, I don't know, maybe she was number 9. She's number 1 to me. But that's accountability in the factory. That's why they put the sticker there. It's not for anybody else. Just if something's screwed up, then Nanny gets a demerit. Right. But anyway, I mean, that Red Cap factory on the far side of Lillington across from Bird's Drive-In, trailer where they had the amazing burgers.
Yeah.
And now there's just a Burger King over there and it sucks. Every day of her life. I mean, like, I'll need to ask her how many years, but like.
She did it longer than Vicky, right? Because, or they, maybe they stopped
she retired.
Because Vicky went to work at the school.
But her entire working life, she worked in one shirt factory the entire time, man.
Right.
I mean, it's like, we have this amazing job where we're so creatively fulfilled and every day's different. I mean, our calendar's filled up and we're told where we have to be and what we have to do and we have to fill all these slots and we get grumpy. But we are doing our passions. Like,
oh yeah.
There's few people on the planet that the percentage of their time is dedicated as highly as ours is to our passions.
Yeah.
And maybe that's a factor, but I don't, for me, but I think it's more still a personality type that like, it's probably both that like, okay, if I had time, I would just like veg out. And maybe that's because I'm so fulfilled. And maybe the average person who isn't would more likely pursue that than not. But I wanna be the type of person that as I continue to gain space in my life to make decisions with what I want to do, that it's things that are healthy, but also meaningful and beyond myself. You can save the wreck, but just tell me the name of the book. I feel like I'd like to maybe read this book.
It's called The Second Mountain.
The Second Mountain, okay. So I'm interested in that. I think that because I don't know that I'm that type of person. I mean, like even this weekend, it's like I'm going camping with the kids, but it's because our friend Nick said, hey, I'm going camping with my kids. Do you wanna come? And I was like, they probably aren't gonna wanna come. And then I asked the kids and they wanted to go. And I'm like, yes, because I didn't wanna take them. I didn't wanna force them.
Yeah.
I was so happy. But it was a tinge of like self-judgment that I wouldn't have gone camping unless I was invited. Like I had the time and my family has the appetite, but I didn't take the initiative to do it. And I wanna be the type of person that's like, continues to, you know, not just sit on my butt.
I'm too hard on myself. I think you're being too hard on yourself because I think that.
Climb that second mountain.
Like when your wife.
Literally.
When your wife texted me and my wife a picture of you, lounging next to your pool this past Saturday, and she said, this is post nude swim link, and you just had a towel. You were asleep, and you had a towel draped over your nether regions. And yeah. She was like, "Still nude, by the way."
Yeah,
I didn't judge you, man. You know what I thought to myself? Man, I should take a nude swim right now. I should be in my pool naked, and then lounging next to it. That's what I thought. Sometimes yeah, a man needs to swim naked, man.
Yeah, and if you zoom in on me, look at how
you look so contented.
Look how content I look right now. Don't worry, Kiko. I'm taking a screenshot for you, so you can see my contented naked body lounging by my pool.
So
share it with the people.
Because
I'm passionate about it.
Again, because I think that
I don't feel bad about that.
I think that so much of what makes us happy is trying to find a way to interact with the modern world in a way that is sort of in symphony with our actual biology. You know what I'm saying? And that's just I know I talk about this and you're tired of it and you don't want to hear me talk about it again when I say it all the time about, you know, Stone Age hardware and modern age software, and those are kind of the source of so many of our problems. But I just feel that way. And so like what you're doing when you lay next to your pool after you've had, like, we work hard. Yeah, we have a great job. It's not a hard labor job. My hands are soft. You know what I'm saying? The tips of my left hand fingers are pretty callous because I play the guitar. But my hands are soft. You know, I used to shake hands with my Uncle Jake, who was a pipe welder. And that dude, it was just like going into the sandpaper section of the Home Depot and just brushing up against it. I mean, his hands were, it was something other than human skin.
It was like boulders wrapped in sandpaper.
Yeah.
Wrapped around your hand.
It was just like touching a man wearing a glove. And then you're like, oh, he doesn't have a glove on. You know?
His hand has become a glove.
And that man worked hard, lived hard, died young. We don't live that kind of life.
Well, he shouldn't have stared right into the welding arc.
I don't think that's what it was. He took the appropriate safety measures, I believe.
Well, he didn't wear gloves.
We have a pretty, we get to do, like you said, privilege out the wazoo. We get to do what we want. We make our own schedule, but we have committed ourselves thoroughly to these aspirations and these dreams on this probably delusional level. And we end up spending a lot of time on it. So when I get home at night or on the weekends, like, I'm exhausted because emotional exertion is a real thing. Like, we're putting our hearts and souls into what we're doing and performing and creating, and it is exhausting and it does have a physical toll. So you shouldn't feel bad about that. I think I think what we're really talking about is when we don't have those obligations, like, because I kind of feel like I know what I would do, like, if all of a sudden everything was good, everything was taken care of, all the people that I love are taken care of, and, you know, I could just, like, step away from everything that we built, and I can do anything that I want. What I would most likely do, like, my first inclination is to just fill my time with other creative endeavors, but things that don't necessarily have to be a commercial success, right? And maybe things that wouldn't even be enjoyed by lots of people. It might just be like, oh, I'm gonna create in this particular way, write or paint or whatever, or I've got this passion project and I wanna do that. And I think that even that would become kind of unfulfilling at some point, right? Because unless I was able to direct those passions and what I can do creatively into, like, greater good to support something or support someone, I think eventually those things wouldn't be very fulfilling. Right now, I think the thing that keeps us going and keeps us so busy is, again, and I do think it's slightly delusional, and that's probably a good thing, is we just have this idea that, like, oh, the next thing that we're gonna create is the best thing we've ever created, and we're gonna find some way to get somebody to help us make it. And we have this sort of rolling list of things that we feel like we have to do. But eventually we're gonna get to the end of that. One of two things is gonna happen. We're gonna do the things on that list, and then realize that they're really not any different from a personal satisfaction point than anything we've ever created. And there's no real joy and happiness there. B, probably more likely, we're gonna get older before, we're gonna lose the ability to do them before we're able to do them. I mean, that might be a pessimistic viewpoint, but it's just like, my greatest fear is that our best work is behind us. But I'm also sort of like using historical data to come to that conclusion that, you know, typically you're moving into your 40s. It's not like you're, I mean, I still believe that our best work is ahead of us. But anyway, at some point we're gonna get to a place where we've either done it or we weren't able to do it. And now we gotta make a decision about what is life gonna be. That's the more pressing question for me personally, because I feel like we're gonna be answering that question for ourselves in a way that maybe the society as a whole is gonna be answering that question in the distant future, because we've got privilege to do it.
I feel like you need to ask yourself that question much less, but the average person might need to ask themselves the question much more. Like, how do I engage my passion for the, and then .. potentially for the greater good? Let me continue with the thread here. Because with every tangent, there is a recentering. So after that, this one guy shared this anecdote, which I'll quickly share. I worked as a controls engineer at a factory that made sports drinks for a few years. Beer, wieners, pastries, sports drinks. Mm-hmm. This is my passion. I'm gonna go back to industrial engineering. I think that's what I'm learning. The factory was originally built in the 70s and had been constantly upgraded. It was eerie because you'd be in a million square foot factory plus warehouse that ran 24/7 producing over 2 million cases of drinks per month. And there'd be 20 to 40 people on duty per shift. So you could be on the factory floor and potentially not see another human being for hours.
That's crazy. I would love to go into a facility like that.
The break room and parking lot were all sized for hundreds of people. So everyone would be on lunch break and it'd only be a small corner of the room with people in it. It always felt a little bit eerie.
So when they built this plant, there was more people in the process.
Yeah, but like back in the 70s. Yeah, million square foot facility. So now there's like 20 to 40 people. Anyway, automation had eliminated hundreds of jobs over the decades and continued to eliminate the remaining ones, including maintenance technicians and housekeeping staff, as the machines got more reliable or came with more capabilities. And at this point I started to think, man, this would be cool in a movie. Like, this is a cool setting for a movie. Like, it's not even in the future, this is now. So we don't have to make like a sci-fi film to do this, but I'm just planting a seed here that like huge factory with like 20 people working in it. Hmm. Let's find a factory and let's write a whole movie in a cavernous factory where you only see people once a day, and then you go to the break room and like they're all huddled in the corner eating, starved for connection. That's eerie, man. That's cool.
I like it.
Yeah, so that's a movie idea that I got. And then we come to it. There's more stuff under people talking about like that guy's post, but then I keep scrolling. I'm about to fall asleep at this point. Like, boy, I've been in the canning process. I've been power washing equipment. I've been thinking about my future and engaging my passions and the future of society. I've been thinking about a movie idea. And right before I shut my little phone and shut my little eyes, I read it. Somebody comments, "That was my nickname in middle school." And if you scroll all the way back up to the top, you'll remember that the second comment was "sticky, smelly mess." Which someone said that was my nickname in middle school.
Okay, that's interesting.
First comment underneath that, "Rhett?" question mark. And then other people are commenting about it. Of course, you say that was my nickname in high school. But on GMM a lot. And I was bolted, I almost sat up on my bed. Like all of a sudden I was like totally awake again.
Yeah.
I was like, I'm like deep.
I know him.
I'm deep, I know him. Yeah, I'm deep in this Reddit thread. It has nothing to do with me, you, or us. And all of a sudden, there you are. Someone who knew you and that dumb catchphrase felt the need to associate themselves with it.
I think it's a pretty good, it's kind of like what she said. That's what she said, it kind of always works.
It's exactly like that in that, except for the fact that if you said that's what she said on our show a lot and people thought that you came up with it. That's the thing I find funny is that you didn't come up with,
I don't think I came up
with that. That was my nickname in high school and you have not claimed to do that. But there are people in the world and there are people on this Reddit thread apparently who so associated with you that I think they may believe that you came up with the catchphrase.
I think I could convince myself that I came up with it. you can control, right. You can control that kind of thing.
Well, this person got it wrong. You said high school, you say high school.
But middle school, sticky and smelly mess, I don't know, it is a little bit more of a middle school thing.
Look at it right there, question mark, Rhett?
But that didn't get much traction.
Didn't get any traction.
No.
You got two upvotes.
Okay.
Huh.
I appreciate that.
It's time to give a wreck in effect as we wrap down this episode. Check, baby, check. I guess it's my turn to give a wreck.
Yeah.
You know what? I didn't come very prepared today. I would like to highly recommend a book called Second Mountain. It's
come on, man.
I haven't started reading it yet, but Rhett was telling me about it, and you.
I'm only a third into it. I don't.
Rhett's
like...
only a third into it, but from what he tells me.
I don't like to recommend
I'm gonna
things
recommend
that I haven't finished.
You're not recommending it. I'm recommending it.
But you can't steal my recommendation,
well,
man.
Well, I'm stealing it. Second Mountain by...
I'm not gonna tell it. I'm not gonna say who it's by.
Rupert Monday. I don't know. Come on, man. What's this? I gotta give the... What?
Is this really your rec?
Yes. Why?
You don't have another rec. David Brooks, man.
David Brooks, Second Mountain.
I think it's called The Second Mountain.
I also recommend Second Act, a 2018 American romantic comedy film directed by Peter Segal and written by Elaine Goldsmith Thomas.
Because that came up on when you did a Google search for Second.
# Earbiscuits, let us know what you think about automation, the future of society, following your passions, and somehow, I don't normally do this, but I just want to encourage you, take a moment, even if it's just a moment today, to engage in a personal passion. Don't wait.
And definitely stop before you become a sticky and sweaty mess. Or what's a sticky and smelly mess?